phone guns and now I'm rushing you. Sorry.
Okay. No, now we're ready now. We're recording.
Thank you. I'd like to ask one of the committee members. Today's January 12th, 2017. Henderson County Animal Services Advisory Committee meeting. I'm John Lynn, vice chair of the committee. I'd like to ask one of the committee members to make a motion to call the meeting to order.
I call the meeting to order.
Ask for a second.
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are now in public session, public meeting here. Welcome, everybody. We actually have people in the audience tonight.
This is fantastic. Nice.
I love it.
You two don't count. Sorry.
This is what?
I don't know. Vince.
But Vince, he's
Vince might count.
I think
Vince might count since he's so dressed up.
I know that's true. You get extra points for the outfit.
I'm John Lynn, and I'd like to start with over to my left and let the committee members introduce themselves.
Hello, I'm Carol Roop.
Catherine Overstreet.
Brian Joel.
Donna Young.
And we have Brad Rayfield here tonight. He's the Director of Animal Services.
Yeah. And if I can have the floor for a minute.
Absolutely. John.
Tonight is John's last meeting, as y'all are all fully aware. And sitting here looking, it's also would be Patty McDuff, and it seems so odd. I didn't realize how it seems so odd to not have Patty here. It's sad. So, but anyhow, Patty's not here, but tonight would be her last meet, but she couldn't be with us. But I want to thank John immensely how supportive he has been of animal enforcement, the shelter. He's been a very good leader as far as at the committee meetings, but even more so during our dangerous dog and aggressive dog appeals. He's been really good, and he's got a pretty nimble schedule, which is always nice for the hearings. So, but John, I appreciate it from, and the county appreciates your service and the time that you've dedicated, and you know, and for folks who are out here, these folks do a lot, but anybody who's interested in being on this board, there is, you know, there's avenues for that, and there's, you know, there's a process going through the Board of Commissioners to get appointed, so we're always looking for new members, and we've got two vacancies that are coming up, or after tonight, we'll have two seats vacant, so... anyhow, with that said, you're acting as chair tonight because the vice chair's not here. So,
I appreciate the words. I really do.
Well, I'd like to add my gratitude. You've been consistent and supportive and available and a teacher and everything. So, I thank you too.
I will. I'll probably be out there sitting next to Corporal Griggs there a time or two over the next few meetings.
Good. We may need your input.
It's hard for me to stay away from this. I really do enjoy this. And if I didn't care about animal welfare and everything and all that, I just, it's very well worth the time. And anybody who would think about doing something, volunteering for the committee, we meet four times a year, basically January, April, July, and October, and the dangerous dog appeals and everything, it's a vital part of what we do. So I highly encourage anybody who would want to step up and volunteer because it's very worthwhile. Absolutely. Well, Officer, I guess we'll start off with officer elections real quick. I'm just going down the agenda here. We need to nominate a chairman and a vice chairman for starting. Actually, you can start tonight and everything. Doesn't mean I'm giving up my gavel immediately, but we'll start tonight with that, and we'll let you close out the meeting. Does anybody have any desire to do that? It's like I say, it's volunteering to be chairman and everything. Even if your schedule doesn't allow you to come to the dangerous dog appeals or anything like that during the day, just coming in and just, you know, conducting the meeting.
If I can say something.
Sure.
The dangerous dog appeals don't have to happen at 2 3 o'clock during the day. Well, we can schedule those later if that's more conducive to our members. That's however we have to do it is fine. We've been fortunate with your schedules and Patty and other folks. And Catherine's here recently to be available during the day where we can hear them earlier. But if that's not possible going forward, that's fine. We can schedule them at 5:30 or 6. So.
Does anybody?
Catherine, would you be willing to hang out with them?
Carol, would you be willing to?
I'm going to do it because I think it needs to be done, and I think we all should probably take a turn, and this can be mine. I'll be the chair.
Great.
That was easy. Well, no. It hurts.
I'll do it. We're good.
Let's do this then.
If you guys don't vote for me,
I'm
going to
shoot.
So embarrassing.
Making it official. I'll nominate Carol to be the chairman of the committee. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
That's passed. Vice chair, would someone like to volunteer for that for a go?
I'll do it.
All right.
Okay, but wait. Here's my problems. I really need to know exactly what that entails as far as it is time, because I'm gone a lot.
I'm not.
I don't want to obligate myself to something and then go.
Let me give you an example. Then this will be easy enough. I've been the vice chair on the committee this year, and James is the chairman. James Barbel, the chairman. He's had to be out a couple of times for emergencies or whatnot, and basically all I've done is just fill in and run for him. I've conducted the meetings.
It's conducting the meetings when
it's been
you're not
it's
there?
Been her backup.
Right. There are only 4 meetings, and then if we have appeals,
I can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just basically being Carol's backup.
Okay. Are you okay with that?
I'll get back to
you. You know me better than anybody on this committee.
Officially, I'll nominate Catherine to be the vice chair. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed. So, at this point, I'll let you have the agenda.
Okay, and do you have Patty's notes?
For
what I'm supposed to say.
I can. What I'll do is I can email the some of the stuff to you. I'll email some of the stuff to you.
Okay.
She was very good about that when she when she chaired the committee.
Right. She mentioned it when I had coffee.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right now we're going into public comment. I've got a seat up there for people who want to do public comment to. Get up and speak.
Okay, so I just make the announcement and see who would like to say anything?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, this phase of the meeting will be for public comment. If anyone has anything that they'd like to say or share with the committee.
I have a question.
Yes.
First, congratulations.
Val, can you come up here?
Thanks.
Thank you.
On your animal abuse conviction.
Yeah.
Good job. A couple months ago, I was here and gave a little talk about the dog chaining effects on the dogs and on the people that live near the chain dogs. And I used a woman named Vera Staney as an example, who lives on Rolling Oaks Drive. And she called me yesterday upset. And one of the dogs, I guess 6 dogs were taken from there. And you know, are going to know more about this than I do, but I think 6 were taken from there a couple weeks ago. Supposedly, the 3 remaining dogs were supposed to have been picked up, but they weren't. And one of them froze to death last weekend in the snowstorm. So I'm wondering, what can we do now from here forward? Can we file animal abuse charges against the guy?
The case is under investigation. Our unit has the case and we're working it. I'm not going to go into details about everything on the case because it is open and there's a lot of background investigation. I don't have to go into it to prove the
That's all I want to know. know, I just want to know something has been done with this guy. And he still has two dogs up there too. So I'm wondering if can we get those out of his custody in the meantime?
When, to my knowledge, he doesn't have any more dogs.
There were two there this morning.
Were they? Okay. I sent one of my deputies back out. They were out there the other day, obviously, when this
Yeah, I don't know if he had them hidden in the house
and
or
what. There weren't any more canines out there, but tomorrow I will. We don't seize dogs in the evening for obvious reasons. But I could send two of my deputies up there.
Okay. Now, one of them is in a kennel now, but there are still two. There were two there this morning.
They used to have two in the kennel. But anyway. I'll have my deputies go up and do a follow up.
Okay.
There's things going on with the actual investigation that I just can't.
Okay. I just want to be able to come back and congratulate you again.
We're going to do our best. And like I was telling you earlier, I'm bragging on the guys. They do a great job.
Yeah.
I don't work these cases really, they get delegated out.
This is a guy with two felonies already. So my information. So. That would be his third felony, too. So.
Yeah, and it's like we were talking earlier. We tried to get the felony so we try to line up for an additional sentencing purposes. So, yeah, but this is under investigation. A lot of these animal crimes, these are not easy. These are not easy cases. It's much longer to find detective investigative stuff.
Well, also, my other question was, did somebody do an autopsy on the dog?
We haven't done the necropsy yet.
Okay.
I really can't go into details on the case. I'm sorry. The necropsy hasn't been done yet at this time.
Okay.
But we're looking at different.
Okay. All right. Because I just want everybody to know that the guy's not living there either. So those dogs, unless he has other people feeding the dogs, he's only showing up once a week to feed the two-year-old.
If you got somebody in the neighborhood who's getting pictures, that would be great for investigation. But, I mean, it's kind of...
Does the officers go take pictures? I mean, since it's dangerous?
It's not a matter of what my guys get there to take photographs. What we try, in trying to prove criminal cases with animals, you have to prove a lot of different stipulations. So a lot of the evidence that we get is evidence that people provide us statements, stuff like that, and help us back up what we're alleging.
Mm-hmm.
Animals can't talk for themselves, so all the other animals that are there now can't tell me, hey, look, this guy's a nice guy or a bad guy.
No. She's scared to take pictures, of course, because the guy's really scary. So when he's around doing something, she's pretty scared.
But we're aware of the case, and we are working on it.
Okay. Cool, that was all I came for. My only question.
The dog died, frozen, that this guy is not responsible and he should be. Well, I guess these facts.
You have to be real careful on these animal cases. These are time consuming cases. It's not like dealing with a person when you can get people to talk to you. So everything we do, we have to be real methodical about. And get things in order. The last thing we want to do is hurry up, arrest somebody, and get them charged, and then we don't have the proper probable cause to charge them for that crime. And then we lose the charge, and we can't go back and recharge things, and they go to court and dismissed.
So, you want to get them good.
Yeah, when we take something to the DA's office, we take something to the DA's office.
Yeah.
And sometimes that takes longer than any of us want to.
Yeah.
But that's just... When our unit works, and we work it through, and then we get the round table and kind of get through what we will and we're not going to
follow. Perfect. Thank you so much. And then, just be aware, like you said, you're going to check on those other two dogs.
I'll send Debbie out there in the morning. When we went out the other day, I tell you, there were no other dogs there the other day.
They might have been up at his aunt's house, the one that has all the other dogs.
Mm-hmm. There it is there.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Did anyone else have any comments they wanted to make or share? No?
Not on that particular subject, but...
On any subject?
I had some questions. I know this is still a fresh sore subject, but with Andy, the Jarvis family pet. I've never dealt with the animal shelter before, and I realize how they portrayed it in the media wasn't exactly how everything went down. They made it out like there wasn't any communication with the animal shelter, when I understand after talking to Steve Wyatt, the county manager, that there was communication between the shelter and the Jarvis family. I don't know where that broke down for the dog to be euthanized, but it's just kind of a nightmare for a family, for myself who has a dog, if they were to be picked up and I wouldn't be able to get them myself. So in talking to Steve Wyatt, he did let me know that some procedures were going to change. And I'm wondering what these new policies and procedures are going to be, what kind of checks and balances are going to be put in so something like this doesn't happen, and where, I really would love to know where the communication breakdown was that allowed this to happen. I know it's hard to put fault to anyone.
Can I speak on this?
Absolutely.
Okay. We're getting ready to go over some of them because I know that the committee members have probably had the same questions that you've just asked, so I feel it's my responsibility to inform them on some of the particulars and things that we're going to do in the future. But to let you know, to put things in perspective for you, I've been running the shelter for, this is my 10th year. That's close to 30,000 animals that I've dealt with, and this is the first time this has happened. On average, we get 350 plus dogs back to their owners a year, and that takes multiple phone calls about multiple phone calls. If you came into my office and you did an audit of the records that we keep, you would see where we exhaust all resources in most cases. In this case, it was definitely unfortunate. I've lost a lot of sleep over it. My staff have taken a beating. I've taken a beating. Doesn't bring Indy back, that we feel bad, you know, and it's unfortunate for the family. The dog was picked up on Thursday before Christmas, about 11:45. So I'll go ahead and talk to you guys. Two deputies, and if I say something that's not consistent with what happened, you guys, you know. So two deputies went out and picked up. They responded to a call where a dog had attacked another dog. Indy was the dog that did the attacking. They picked Indy up, brought Indy to the shelter on Thursday morning. Indy had a collar on with a tag. While the officers were still in the field, they tried to make contact with the family out in the field, and they were unsuccessful in that. So on the message, there was no actual contact made except for a voicemail. And so the voicemail instructed the Jarvises to call the sheriff's department, which they did around, I don't know, sometime later that evening. That's correct. And he wanted to get his animal back. Well, we were closed Friday for Christmas. We were closed Saturday, and we were closed Sunday. And I'll go ahead and speak to one of our policy changes. We've always kind of went with what state law allows. If we're cleared by state law, then we're good. State law says you make a reasonable effort to contact an owner and you hold an animal for 72 hours. So at this point, that had been done. Except for our policy change now, anytime the shelter's closed, we're not going to count those days as a 72 hour. Now, I'll tell you what we're giving up on doing that. And I don't expect everybody to understand all the shelter dynamics and the things I have to know, my folks have to know, but, you know, I'm holding a dog now for an extra time period that's probably not adoptable, meaning that if I have other animals coming in, we're an intake facility, so we have to make room. So here, that forces me, potentially, to put down adoptable animals. And then I'm still faced with probably putting this animal down at the end of the 72 hours. So there's a lot of dynamics that people don't realize. But, you know, we'll work through it with all the good rescue groups that we've got in the vicinity that we work with. They relieve a lot of that pressure for us, fortunately. But anyhow, to get back on the sequence of events, so that's to answer one question to you. That's one thing that we're going to change as far as the 72 hour, or the way that we define 72 hours is going to change, and to benefit the owner and let them have more time to get the animal back.
Will that mean just holidays, or does that mean
anytime we're
weekends?
Closed? Anytime we're okay. Closed. If we're closed for snow, that day don't count. So anytime we're closed, yeah. On Sundays, that counts for Sundays too, because we're closed on Sundays. But anyhow, so when he talked to the officer that night, the officer explained to Mr. Jarvis that he couldn't get the dog back because we were closed for the holidays, and that's consistent with what we've always done. But he was instructed to call us at 10 o'clock Tuesday morning to find out what he needed to do to get his dog back, and that failed to happen. So Wednesday, it's my understanding from my staff, I wasn't there, that our quarantine area was full. We've got other animals coming in. This dog, what we see on the card is that the owner knew the dog was there and had been notified. And that's all the information we had. The dog had been there all day Tuesday, all day, the time that it was there on Thursday, and we had not had any contact or any messages over the weekend that these people were going to get their dog. So we had no indication that the people were interested in getting their dog. And that's not unusual for somebody who's had a dog that's in a dog fight and, you know, it's came into the shelter multiple times. A lot of times people just decide, hey, you know, I've had it, I'm not going to. And this wasn't the case with this dog. Now, where my procedures did not get followed was that I have a person or a position where their responsibility is to check phone messages every morning and report that in the proper places, and that failed to happen that morning. So it's as much a personnel issue as it is a policy issue. It doesn't mean that we can't learn from this and put some stricter policies in place, but you know, it's a personnel issue, and I'm not at liberty to discuss a whole lot of that. But so, does anybody have any other questions?
Did Jarvis ever make contact with someone at the shelter?
He did through a phone message overnight on Tuesday night.
And that's what was missed.
Tuesday
night, he was supposed to call that morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
However, we didn't know he was even supposed to call that morning. We didn't know that he had even reached out to talk to us. So, but anyway, that's the story. If anything's different,
may I address the board?
Sure. Sergeant Paul Blackwell,
Animal Enforcement.
Thank you. For you folks that don't know me, I'm the supervisor with Animal Enforcement with the Henderson County Sheriff's Office. This situation with the Jarvis dog was unfortunate, to say the least. A lot of what happened, though, folks, was a media crisis. They didn't report the facts. The fact was that the Jarvis dog did come off of its property, and it did attack another dog. The man had his dog under control. Yes, ma'am, those facts didn't come out. And that's what, if you heard Corporal Griggs a while ago speaking to these ladies, we have to deal with facts. When we deal with a court of law, when we come in here to the Animal Board, we have to deal with facts. We have to leave the emotional part out of it. With the Jarvis dog, that dog came off of his property, attacked another dog. We were looking at a possible deeming the dog dangerous because of the attack. From my understanding, the other dog was under control. It was on a leash. That was left the possibility open, too, of a person being attacked, which it didn't happen. That man was able to run the dog off, the Jarvis dog off. I believe Corporal Griggs was actually the one that went down and picked up Andy, the Jarvis dog. I was closely behind him. When I got down there to the scene, Corporal Griggs had already left, but the other officers were there. They had made contact with the voicemail of Mr. Jarvis, left him a message. He didn't call back until late that night. Deputy Lanning, who is with Animal Enforcement, spoke to him. Deputy Lanning told me that he spoke to Mr. Jarvis, told him that he could not give him the dog back because it was already in the animal shelter system, which we often do if we're not already in the system. He told him that he would have to call Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock and let them know. From my understanding, Mr. Jarvis said he would call and he would go to the shelter on Tuesday. Mr. Jarvis failed to do that. He didn't call back until after hours, when the phones are cut off and it goes rolls over to the voicemail. These are the facts that we were dealing with. Mr. Jarvis would have probably received at least a $100 ticket and was definitely looking at having his dog deemed dangerous in this situation. I've worked with Animal Enforcement now over 2 years. We work very closely with the animal shelter. They do a tremendous job. And I'm sure most of you folks have been out there and checked. Anytime I go out there, they're real hustlers. They work hard. They do a tremendous job. Sometimes that place gets full quick, real quick. They have to do something. I mean, it's a sad fact of life. They have to do something. We've seen them work closely with Blue Ridge Humane Society, Charlie's Angels, Brother Wolf. They will do anything that they can do to save an animal. I've seen them go to extraordinary lengths to save an animal. So, am I bragging on them? Yes, I am. Yes, I am. They do a very good job. So, it's a sad fact of life. People do not care for their animals. I believe Mr. Jarvis's dog, I believe that was the third or fourth time that he had actually been to the shelter. So, I mean, that's a fact of the situation, too. I believe we had a situation where the owner was being irresponsible, and that was a big cause of this problem. So that's our take on that. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Would you say that when dogs are in the system, they are often allowed to be picked up?
If we pick a dog up and we make contact, or the people make contact with us, it happens quite often. Before we get them to the shelter and actually get them in the system. And when I say that, when I say the system, if we pick a dog up tonight, that dog is actually not in the system until tomorrow morning when the shelter opens and they come in and they get it all in. Oftentimes, if we get an animal in, we will take the animal in. We'll check to make sure it doesn't have a chip, which we've had chip readers in our trucks, but we're down now. They've all broken down, and we're about to repurchase some more. Excuse me. And we will be checking them in the field closer. That makes it a little easier for everybody. But now we get them to the shelter. We check for a chip. We call the company, and we try to contact the owner. Oftentimes, if we have time, we will let those folks come to the shelter and pick their dog up then. If there's a citation involved, we'll write them a citation or whatever is deemed necessary at the time. But oftentimes we'll turn the dog back over to them then. And then there's usually not a reclaim fee or anything through the shelter. But once it goes into the system, then it's out of our hands and it's into the animal shelter then.
Well, if an animal attacks, like in this situation, then they're not going to be automatically released back to the owner, are they?
Not necessarily. We have to look at the totality of the situation. This wasn't the dog that was attacked wasn't injured.
Okay.
Andy made a mistake. Andy jumped on a bigger dog than he was, and I think he took the brunt of that fight, that attack. But if it's a serious situation, if it's a serious injury, then no. We would probably take the dog, and they would have to go through the system and through the whole thing.
Have a determination,
have the dog deemed dangerous to get their dog back.
Or even a nuisance.
Or even a nuisance or aggressive, yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Also something, and just on top of my mind, I think you said something before one time, Brad, that holidays in particular, the shelter fills up very, very quickly.
It does, and a lot of that's because there's more people out conversing with, you know, family and things like that, and overlooking maybe their animals when they normally would be focused on them more. Or you have people from out of town that might let a dog out that's normally not supposed to be let out of a fence and things like that. So especially after 4th of July, I mean, our reclaims after the weekend of the 4th of July are, you know, pretty high, so...
We had if you'll go to the county's website and go into the animal services part of it, listen to the October meeting notes. It's on audio file there, and you can download it and listen to it. Brad gave us a presentation at that one, and it was very good and very enlightening because I personally was appalled at some of the comments that were happening on WLOS's Facebook page after that incident because... I mean, for once, I was actually kind of, I felt like I was on the inside looking out going, oh, guys, y'all have no clue what you're talking about, you know, and everybody was calling for this person's head and that person's head and all that. Brad, over the past years that he's worked, that he's been here at the animal shelter, they have dropped the euthanasia rate for the animals. They have adopted out so many animals, and... I hope I can speak for all of us when I say that we were all very shocked at just how far down the euthanasia rates have come since Brad's been over at the shelter. So it's not like, you know, none of the animal enforcement people at all are on a head hunt looking for, you know, hey, we got to go put one down, let's go find one tonight. You know, that's what a lot of the commenters made it seem like, but that's as far from the truth as it can get. And, you know, I just listened to some of the statistics that he pulled up over the last few years. We, like I said, Sergeant Blackwell said, Brother Wolf, the Humane Society, Charlie's Angels, all these other ones, they've sent animals out of our area to places where people have no animals to adopt. And, I mean, they go to that, you know, that extent working with them. So, far from the truth from what they, you know, people were posting online, and after what Sergeant Blackwell just said up here at the podium, I hadn't heard that part of it. We didn't know, you know,
that
was not in the paper at all.
I'll also add to that, in addition to the shelter, and I've only been sitting on this committee for a short time, but in addition to the incredible improvements in the statistics on the shelter, which I credit this man for, the police officers who go out when there is an incident, I have absolute confidence in, because they know dogs, they love dogs, they are reasonable and rational. You know, they're not going to go out there and get emotional. They can look at a situation, they can define it, and they can act appropriately. So, we're very lucky in a lot of ways. This was just sad that it happened. It was sad that this dog froze to death when he was so close to being rescued, but not from this side. Everybody who was involved in it probably felt as bad as the Jarvises did. It happened, but not the way the paper said.
I understand.
We all have dogs.
So how are you going to ensure that your procedure is followed if it was basically down to this one person and then not checking the voicemail? And how can you avoid that in the future?
Just like anybody would with any personnel issue. You know, it's a series of disciplinary action that, you know, so, you know, it's not, you know, it lends itself to a lot of different factors, you know. But you can write policies and procedures all day long, but you're never going to avoid human error.
And the Jarvis has had a duty here, too. I mean, if they had followed up timely, or, I mean, I can remember once when my dog was gone, I was at that shelter before it even opened. And I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying that there was, all of this kind of came together, and the result was sad.
Is there something that could be set up, like maybe on a volunteer kind of basis, where a dog could be released to somebody, like in this case, like could they have opened up the shelter for them to get their dog that night, Thursday night?
No. Not that I could approve, no. Well,
and if you have a case where the dog has been aggressive,
that's
you're
true.
Not going to release.
That's true.
Yeah.
So not necessarily in this case.
And probably
and
not,
there's
but who
safety,
wants to make
there's,
the determination?
There's safety issues with that, too. I mean, you would be the only person there collecting a reclaim fee from somebody who may or may not be happy about their animal being found and having to come and get it at the shelter. I don't even let one of my people stay there by themselves. And you can ask these guys if there are circumstances where everybody has to leave and one person has to stay behind, because we do make the exception for somebody to come with outside of our hours. These guys will have somebody out there to kind of have our back.
I can understand.
Yeah. There's a lot of that folks don't understand about it, but that's the main reason would be safety and the fact that there's a lot to know as far as, you know, how to process things and stuff like that.
Is there something that could be done as far as community outreach? Do y'all need more foster families? I mean, is there anything that could be set up to get the community more involved so there isn't such an overpopulation?
Well, what we're doing on that front is we do that sort of through working with Blue Ridge, Brother Wolf, and even Charlie's Angels. They come out and pull animals from us, and they get those animals into fosters and things like that. The reason we can't do fosters is the same reason why, you know, I can't forecast how many animals are going to come into my shelter at any given time. Anybody that has managed a foster program will tell you that you always have people who all of a sudden say, I can't do this anymore. If we've got 10 dogs out in foster programs, and we have 5 people decide, I just can't do it anymore, then that's even more intake that we're having to deal with, and even more uncertainty.
Vince?
Sorry. I just want to reiterate something on this. On some of these issues with the shelter, as far as the population and things go in there, you heard a couple of the ladies here, Lalonga, mention of the 6 dogs we seized from a abusive situation. We've gone out to houses and some of the, we've taken in up to 15 dogs at one time.
Out of one house.
It was pretty bad. And Mr. Rayfield came out there with us and helped. The shelter came to the house with us.
And when we know that happens, they give us a heads up, and I can call Blue Ridge and they'll come out and, we've got ways to relieve it. But, you know, when we've got 11 quarantine spaces, and we have to, by law, keep those animals 72 hours. A dog that's in quarantine, I can't send it out into a foster. That's not public safety-wise. I can't do that.
Yeah, so there's the restraint on the population. That's one of the things this is part of the process. Nobody wants that end result. It's unfortunate, but, what we have to work with and the way they move things around, I've seen them get Brother Wolf and stuff. They have sent dogs up to like New York and all over the place to try to get them going. I mean, they do a great job. But with this place with the quarantine and all, it's real hard to do some of that stuff. There's no telling how many dogs they didn't bring.
I just didn't know if it should have been.
Yeah, I'd like to comment. On our part, as far as animal enforcement goes, something that we have done, we have implemented in our standard operating procedure, that any time we have a callback from someone when we've put a dog in the shelter, now we will send an email to Brad and several of them. I think Derek sent you, sent everybody at the shelter an email with a follow-up. So we're trying to open our lines of communication up even more. A lot of times they're there. They're there up until 4:30. They close, and then they're there later. And a lot of times, like Brad said, we will stay there with them. A lot of times people don't understand. People get very emotional when their dog has been taken for some reason, and then it's almost like a kid. They don't want you to blame their dog. Oh, my dog didn't do that. Well, yes, your dog did do that. So that's when we come in into the picture. So we have had a couple of instances where it could have possibly turned into something dangerous. But on our part of it now, we are trying to make contact more. And when we send an email out, we send it to everybody. When we've had a follow-up or something that concerns one of the dogs there. I don't think people realize how many animals go through the shelter. And if people were better responsible, more responsible for their animals, we wouldn't have this problem. But there are so many stray animals out there that people won't come and claim. And that's where we get into trouble. And that's why the shelter stays full. They have to do something. They have to do something with them. And it's just a fact of life. It really is.
I have a comment, comment. My concern basically was simply, on a podium, if I've made a reasonable effort to come and collect my animal, the animal shelter's closed. This is the way the articles seem like. Is it going to be, 72 hours? I've been trying to make it there. You know, my car broke down. I'm stuck in South Carolina or whatever. I'm calling and communicating. At the end of the 72 hours, is my dog going to be put down because I can't make it back? I guess that's
absolutely not.
Right. So that's the not. My concern was just the due right. process there. If I'm doing my part, being reasonable,
well,
making
we make
a reasonable attempt
points
to come
of contact
pick them
with
up.
People, if we know that somebody's there. Now, I will tell you this: if I have communicated to somebody numerous times that you've got till this date and time mm-hmm. to get your animal, and I've given them 5 or 6 days, and I'm having to put dogs down all around that one,
right?
I'll put that dog down.
Sure.
But if somebody has demonstrated that they're wanting to get the dog back and they're doing all they can to get it, and on even holidays, we generally will keep dogs a lot longer past the 72 hours.
Right.
In this case, it wasn't an option, given everything that we knew at the time when
right.
the decision was made. So.
Well, it does seem like a perfect storm kind of situation
yeah.
where all the variables were in the right place to make this unfortunate incident occur. So, but yeah, I mean, as long as and that was my only concern. As long as there's some type of process there, if I'm making reasonable effort to come collect my animal,
as long as I'm there,
no,
that's not going to
sure.
happen.
No. Okay.
As long as I'm in charge there, yeah, that will not happen for
cool.
sure. I'll promise you that.
That's okay. Awesome. That was my only comment. Thank
yeah.
you.
Kind of sidetracked with many dogs to bring in. But if you guys want to help out with something, I would love to have you guys help us out. What we need is we need the communication to get the public. You got to make sure you have your dogs covered. You got to make sure you keep them on the leash. Spay and neuter, yeah, that's a big thing. Make sure they have the rabies shots. You'll be amazed how many citations we write because people don't have their dogs vaccinated.
Yeah,
it's inexpensive.
Getting
the knowledge out there would be a great benefit on our agency part. Just to give people an understanding this. Well, I grew up here for the most part, and I grew up on Pinnacle Mountain. I had a black lab in the morning. And I get up in the morning, the black would take off. And she'd be gone all day. I come home from school, she may or may not be there. Now, supper time, she was hungry.
Right.
And we let her in the house. And she ran all over the building. But today, my dog can't go out of the yard because times have changed.
Right.
And what we got to get out there is for people to understand. You know, I grew up here. You know, I wish my dog could go out and roam around, come home, but those days are gone. So to get that mindset to people who have lived here forever, or even new people coming in, because some of these users, you know, they come move in from Montana where they got 300 acres for a dog to run in, and move here they have half acre. And there's differences. So to help us out would be to find some way that to help us get the information out to the community. Look, times aren't like they used to be. These are why we need to do these things. This is why we need to be responsible with this. Make sure your dogs are kept on that home or in the yard. Are they going to get out sometimes? Absolutely. I found out in the lab the other day, she could climb a brick wall. Who knew? So I was in the front yard, she wanted to come too. And guess what? She did. I'm like, oh my God, how'd you do that? But I learned something that day. Can't leave her in the back pen, she'll climb the brick wall. So you just got to get it out. And I think once the community as a whole understands, hey, look, times have changed, things have changed, and we need to really work on getting these things together, we'll see less complaints come in. Our unit, we take 3 calls to every patrol officer. And we're one of the busiest units in the agency. I got 6 guys working all the time. We take care of our own criminal investigation and everything else. One thing we've had to do is get patrol to start assisting us with dogs running at large because they come in so often that we don't have the manpower to take the calls. So getting that information out to the public, make people be more receptive and responsible, would be great. Now, how to do that, I don't know. I don't know if we've kept meetings in places. I'm more than happy to go out and talk to anybody. I talked to that wall all night if you want to. But I'm more than happy to come out to a community that you guys have or an area you guys want to set something up. I'll come out and talk to you.
Maybe the newspaper that printed this story would like to hear some of this. Maybe they would be interested in another story.
Maybe not. But
or did, well.
Yeah, WLS.
Did they talk to anyone other than the family, do you know?
They talked to Steve Wyatt in the paper.
Yeah,
they had a quote from Steve.
They never contacted the shelter, they never contacted us before they published it and had it on the paper.
Yeah.
And then after that, they went and spoke to Mr. White, and then they published it, I believe, in the Citizen Times.
Then
we got out the story. That's kind of unusual. They usually make contact with us or Mr. Rayfield at the shelter. This time they did, and then it caused a big stir. and they didn't have all their facts. They didn't have all their facts in. I believe you heard it the board. They hadn't heard all the facts. So the facts just weren't out there. And when we're dealing with something like this, even as unfortunate as it is, we have to have the facts. We have to have the facts. And in that situation, it boils back. When you've got a dog that's been to the shelter 3 or 4 times, there's an issue right there. There's an issue right there. So, you know, and we're not pointing fingers. We're not trying to point fingers. We're trying to find a solution to the problem. And Mr. Rayfield has changed some of his policies. We've changed some of ours that we are going to open our lines of communication even more than we do now. We have. Anytime we have something, there's an email sent, there's text sent. Anytime somebody, an animal owner, contacts us, we make sure that they get it immediately. So, I mean, that's helping a lot. But that's not going to alleviate the problem. Corporal Griggs, you know, he said the awareness with people. We've had articles, stories in the paper. We're working on our website. We've had a website up before. We're working on that again to get all of the information refreshed. People don't understand. We have dangerous dogs out here. We have actually worked at what we would consider a murder case with a young child out in Mountain Home. We worked another situation with an elderly lady in Etowah. How she lived through that dog attack, I do not know.
I remember
that. Yes. We deal with some bad dog fights. We deal with some bad animal situations where people have been hurt. And people don't, they still don't understand the rabies. Rabies is real. It is real. If you contract rabies, if you contract rabies, there is no cure. There is no cure for rabies. And people don't understand that. You'd be surprised how many people we deal with on a weekly basis that have never had their rabies shot. So, I mean, it's very real. People don't consider it serious anymore. So that's what we have to deal with, and that's what the shelter has to deal with, too.
I got two things, if I can speak. The first thing, Mr. and Ms. Britton, is that I appreciate you guys coming out, because I can tell you guys are concerned, and I wish more citizens were as proactive as you guys are. Another thing, this is the little, it's worth noting, if you come out to the shelter right now and you saw the reason that the animals were there, this time of year, it's not so much running stray. Another problem that we have is owner retention. When we have people getting animals that they haven't thought through, you know, the commitment, that lands a lot of animals at the shelter. The majority of the animals I have right now that are up for adoption are owner relinquished. So that's something that a lot of people don't realize. The other thing is that this situation was unfortunate, but if there's anything positive to take from it, is that it's forced us to review our procedures and see where there's deficiencies. And Mr. Wyatt has made it clear to me that I'm to look at our policies and procedures and, you know, beef them up a little bit and make sure that this doesn't happen again. And nobody wants that more than I do. I don't want it to ever happen again. This, besides something happening to my kids or family, this was the single worst thing that could have happened to me. I don't take it lightly. My staff doesn't take it lightly. We don't take putting any animal down lightly, but when we put down an animal that we know a family wanted, it stings even more. And that, coupled with the media and the social media, where people are at liberty to say things unchecked, is also hurtful. So, but we've got a couple other items on the agenda if you guys want to move on.
Another shelter policy.
Well,
just discussed.
It is. I've got some material here that maybe I'll just hand out, because I don't know that we've got, you know, we can look at. In drafting and beefing up our shelter policies, I was wanting to get some feedback from you guys on definitions.
Should we take this now and have it put on the agenda for the next meeting?
I think that's appropriate. And in fact, the next thing that I want to send to you guys is a work in progress, and it's probably going to, if anything, it's going to shed light on the process that we have to go through with every animal that comes through the shelter, as far as contacting owners. You know, contacting an owner, it's great if everybody has a phone and they answer it, but, you know, we get numbers where people don't answer their phone. You know, do we consider that a point of contact? Well, what else are we supposed to do? You know, if somebody won't answer their phone or won't return our calls, you know, how many points of contact, what's reasonable for us to do? And what's the time period there?
See, I think if a dog's missing,
yeah,
and
so
they should have, and I'm not, again, it's not a blame thing. I have a dog too, but if your dog's missing, you don't wait around to see if somebody's going to contact you. The shelter, I would think, would be the first place you'd call.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest with you, probably if I wasn't in this line of work, I don't know that I would think to call the shelter. I don't know if I would or not. I might would after a day or two, but I know prior to me, you know, I had animal experience, you know, prior to this, before before I got into this particular position, I don't know if I would have or not.
I did.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of my first. Because you don't think you've got 100 places to call, you know, that if the dog's been picked up, he or she's only going to be in so many places.
Yeah. a lot of people call the Humane Society and Brother Wolf.
Well, that's a good start, places. And they probably see
and they direct them.
Shelter.
Oh, yeah, they direct them to college.
Because they won't pick them up.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so we'll review this, and then this will be on the agenda for the next meeting. Is that good?
It is. However, I'm telling you, this is, it's a work in progress. But, in fact, what I had rather happen is that you guys look over it, and if y'all have questions through email, you can question me or you know, things like that, and we'll try to do that. In fact, I'm trying to get this finalized.
I would think we need to get it done before April. I mean, try to get.
Yeah.
The issues I think are kind of pressing, and not that all the policy will be changed by then, but
yeah,
hate to start.
Yeah.
Don't discuss anything until then. So.
Right.
More correspondence we can have with you.
Yeah, I think that would be good, and then you know we can do it in a public meeting. But if you guys want to, while we're here, right now. Won't y'all just glean over it, and if you have any questions, you may show you what kind of set the tone a little bit, if you will.
What is CET?
Certified Youth Technician. You know what? I'm going to go lock that front door.
My purse.
Well, shut your purse off.
No, that's.
Ms. Chairman?
He came up and asked me and Patty how much we were off to be at home.
Right, yeah.
The ATE procedures here, proof of ownership, veterinary record, adoption contract, receipt from a breeder or pet store, or information in the records that contains matching name of the person signing animal over to the animal shelter. Seems like there needs to be something else besides that.
Besides which one?
What if you don't have... Okay, you know, maybe you're not the most responsible people, or your dog never gets sick and you don't take him to the vet.
Okay.
Okay, so you don't... Maybe someone has a new animal, they don't have a veterinary record yet, and they may have got it from their uncle who...
Well, you've claimed to be the owner and taking care of the animal for over 7 days.
I'm talking about proof of ownership.
Oh, proof of ownership.
Yeah. I look at that, and I see an issue with possibly somebody not actually owning the dog and not being able to get their dog.
Okay, you've lost me.
Okay. We have a definition of who the owner is.
Right. Where's that?
But on the adoption
proof of ownership.
Procedure.
Okay.
At the very bottom, there's the owners, there's the definition of who the owner is. But as far as proof of ownership and everything, the four items that are mentioned.
Are you looking at the definition?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And proof of ownership.
Yeah.
As far as proof of ownership, with the four items that are mentioned there and everything.
There's another category.
I think there needs to be something.
Yeah.
There should be. I mean, I would say, add something to the effect of. I know it says receipt from a breeder or pet store, but say like my son raises blue heelers, okay, and he, you know, they're not AKC registered or anything like that, but my son raises blue heelers, so his, you know, when he has a litter of pups and everything. They'll take the dogs, and after they're weaned and all that, they've had their shots and all that, but he'll turn around and give it to someone. Well, there's no receipt exchange, and he's not an official dog breeder.
But he doesn't give the records from the vet or from the shots
to the person to get the puppy?
He will, but what if they don't have that, and their name's not on it?
Okay, that's fine.
His name is on it.
And I was thinking, like, I moved into the area. I brought a dog with me.
Sure.
And I could have lost her before I saw a vet or had her registered or, I mean, I couldn't approve it. She's a farm girl. I couldn't approve an ownership.
What about adding something about having a written affidavit from someone who can attest that you own the dog? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it might not be that simple.
Before you get too hung up on proof of ownership, what's your concern on somebody not being able to provide proof of ownership?
Being able to get their dog. That's all.
If somebody comes in and says that an animal's there, if you look at this, I know this is a lot of information. If you look at this, I've got different categories. Known owner, uncontested, means that, yeah, they're saying it's their animal, but we don't have any proof that it's their animal, right. But there's nobody to say that it isn't their animal.
Okay.
We're not going to deny somebody that comes in and says, oh, that's my dog in that cage. We're not going to make them provide proof to us. We can't do that it's their animal.
Right.
But now if somebody else comes up and says,
up to that kennel and said, and that's my dog, and that dog reacts like, I don't want to be. I mean, you know, if I lost my dog and went there, that dog would be so glad to see me. And what do you, I mean,
well, we've never had that happen before. But if somebody's coming, they come in and point out that it's their animal, and we can't prove otherwise, then I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do.
You
know?
You can't say.
Well, and that's why people say, well, why don't you put, this is what a lot of people, why don't you put pictures of lost animals on your website? Well, because then if somebody sees an animal they like, they're going to come in and say, hey, that's my animal. At least people have to initiate the contact with us and give us some kind of description that, you know, is close to the animal. And, you know, that's reasonable for us. Now, where we have had stuff is, you know, maybe one person says it's their animal and another person says it's their animal. Well, somebody better be coming up with some proof of ownership then.
Who has the most dog hair on them?
Yeah, or who has a picture on their phone of them with the animal, you know, stuff like that.
Look in their cards.
So just because somebody doesn't have proof of ownership doesn't mean that they're not going to get their animal back.
And everybody knows, so I have all of my cats on my phone, so there's no question that my cats are mine.
Picture on your phone.
Yeah.
We're looking for the odd case.
All right, that's fair enough.
Okay.
Hey, Brad, can you speak to maybe any policies as it relates to internal communication in the shelter, as it relates to these intake cards?
Any communication that we have with the owner, or anything that we get from the community about a possible owner of an animal is put in the paperwork. It's in the paperwork. Yeah.
So, irregardless of who it is, it's all, you know, contacts, first contact, second contact.
It's all in one place.
All initialed by somebody as having
been done. We've always done that. It's the date, time, and the initials of the person who took the message.
Okay. Because, I guess in this particular case, it's always a communication error that seems to to yeah. break down that causes these instances,
right.
whether it's here or anywhere. And yeah. I guess.
And this is, was a multi-departmental breakdown.
And the owner.
Yeah.
Everybody keeps leaving out the owner. I mean, the owner didn't come when he was asked to, and he didn't call within hours. I mean, his effort was kind of poor.
Yeah, and I.
And then coupled with a mistake.
But I can't. I guess what I'm going at is I can't do anything about the owner. I guess, you know, we're trying to
yeah,
avoid
right.
things at the shelter. So, you know, I agree, you know, you can't.
Yeah. And you know, whether or not the dog had attacked another dog, that's beside the point. It don't matter if that dog had killed a dog. That's beside the point. A mistake was made that shouldn't have been made. It doesn't matter the stuff leading up to it, you know. Somebody dropped the ball, and you know.
So, and I guess that's just my thing.
Yeah.
You know, communication and checks.
That's something I preach all the time. And I have staff meetings once a month, and usually the focus is customer service, communication, safety. So.
It's like you said, you can have all the procedures you want, and if somebody doesn't follow what they're supposed to follow, then.
Yeah.
That's human error.
It seems like on these intake cards, though, if you're looking at those intake cards as
mm-hmm.
to, you know, this animal has been here 72 hours, we've had 2 points of contact with no response,
mm-hmm.
you know, now it's, you know, eligible for euthanasia.
Yeah.
Somebody physically has to sign off on that intake card saying that, you know,
with their initials
has been checked, that
yeah.
all these points of communication have been
right.
covered.
Right. They
somebody
do now.
Physically, yeah.
But before it was even like that.
Okay.
But when you have it, okay, I'll tell you, the person who decided to euthanize this animal, this is the information he had on the card, and I'm not trying to throw anybody or any agency under the bus, but on the card he had this at the top of the card, owner's been contacted. This dog attacked another dog. We didn't have any other information than that on that card. I can't do anything about that. So,
those cards are signed off on by somebody.
They are.
That literally says, you know,
they are
checking boxes saying this has been done, this has been done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
let me
see about that.
What I would invite you guys to do, and what would help in this process even, is to come out to the shelter, and I'll show you every card that we've taken. A lot of them are up in the attic because we keep them for, you know, several years. But just look at the cards. Prior to this incident, you'll see where my people, date, time, that's my people, though. That's all I'll say.
Gotcha.
But,
said on that, yeah.
One of my employees, I did have a thing to prevent it from happening, and one of my employees failed, and that's all I can say about that. I can't say what has been done, but
on the
agenda, the next one was attendance,
okay.
Which is an obvious concern. Does anybody have any ideas on how to go forward with attendance? We're at the first of the year. Typically, that's when we reset the attendance thing.
Well, what is the regulation again? You can miss what?
One meeting.
Only one meeting. So, do we start new this year? Do we review the ones from last year?
Or? Well, typically, what we've done in the past, and I don't know that it really is clear in the charter or the bylaws, but what we've always done in the past was start January with that first meeting, correct, John?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking John because he's been here longer than mm-hmm. Donna. Because the way that people have approached their meeting their attendance is, well, it's December, or no, what is it? Our last meeting is what, in October? You know, some people would miss October because they knew that that was their meeting they could miss. Now, if y'all want to start making it, starting now, it goes back. It can cross the year. If you miss, we just have to figure out how to.
Your term is 3 years, which is 12 meetings over the course of 3 years. So
each year. I don't know because I don't really I don't keep score. I didn't know if anybody missed, like for 2016, if anybody missed more than one meeting, if that needed to
We had talked about that at the last one, and I think we had decided that the couple people who did miss two meetings, it was work-related to things they couldn't control.
And I think my opinion on this is that, first of all, it's only four meetings a year. And if you sign up for this, you ought to be pretty sure that you can make four meetings a year.
Right.
Stuff happens.
Three is all
Stuff happens to all of us. And if it's, unavoidable, then, let us all say, okay, whatever. But I think that when you get on this committee, you need to be able to say in your head, yeah, I can do that, and I'm willing to do it. And so I think if it becomes a chronic thing or the excuse for missing it is, the dog ate my homework, it's just not, it's...
Well, and they ask you to make the commitment. I mean, that's part of the request when you fill in an application. And I think also you need to add to that or balance in on that there's a long list of people who would like to sit on this committee, who would like to make the commitment and to honor it. And four meetings a year, or three meetings, if you can miss one, that's...
And you know when they are. I mean, they're already in the calendar, way in advance. And
this last time I put out two reminders, one last week and one this week. So.
And do you get feedback that somebody won't be able to come?
Sometimes I do. That's going to bring me back to what I want to suggest. This is up to you guys. But I say that if somebody's not going to be in attendance, that they email either the chair or myself. I'd prefer it be the chair, but email somebody, letting them know, or copy everybody on there. Everybody's got everybody's email saying, hey, I'm sorry, I've been called out of town for work. And then at the meeting, decide, is this going to be, the committee members, is this going to be an excused absent or unexcused?
I don't think that's what you're
saying. See, I'm okay with that. And
if there's no response, it's automatically unexcused. So.
Okay.
Is that beyond the first allowed absence?
So we have to go with the second one, or if you want to count, if you want to try to get the first one excused.
I think the way it's worded is you can't miss more than 25% of the meetings, so that's
one
meeting.
It's fair to the other committee members.
But I guess maybe Brian's asking if it's an approved, whatever we deem that to be approved, whether like a birth of a child, his defense and some.
Well, then they can miss another meeting, I guess.
That's what you're.
I'm saying if it's excused.
Beyond the
25% of the meetings.
But thoroughly, it's just like you with an employee. Someone doesn't call, someone doesn't let you know,
fired somebody for a no call, no show here just this last week.
Those are just not acceptable.
And y'all might decide, personally, if I was on a committee and somebody said, well, my kid had a ball game, that would be unexcused because, I can't fault somebody for wanting to go to the kid's ball game, but, if this committee doesn't fit into your current lifestyle situation, then you need to step down and let somebody, like you said, there's plenty of people in line to serve on the committee.
And I'm not as comfortable as I should be speaking as much because I do have the time and I do, but I make myself available too. I've got other commitments and it's so out there, you know, 3 times to 4 times a year, and these are the dates.
You know, luckily we've got a quorum tonight. Otherwise, one of y'all wouldn't have came tonight. We wouldn't have been able to do elections even.
Yeah, we have to have 5 people here to have elect officers. Yeah.
And who is missing tonight? Chairman Barbel.
Barbel, Hargis, and Marsteller. Now, I know why Marsteller's out, and it's for a very good reason. But if we had this and you guys are going to have to put this to a vote. I think that, you know, frame it however you want to and vote that, you know, an absence to be excused has to first be met with email or some kind of notification prior to the meeting and a reason. And then the committee members at that meeting can all discuss and put it to a vote, is so-and-so's reason for absence excusable or not, yay or nay. That.
Anyone want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that you draft that email and send it to
everybody. You mean?
I know, I'm your vice chair. What you want?
I want you to do it. No. I'm delegating.
I'm leaving Saturday.
I know you are. How about I draft an email and send it to you and you tell me what you think?
That's fine. You send it to everybody.
Okay. Email I guess if
you're emailing everybody, that's kind of like notifying everybody. So yeah, just email me and we'll converse and see.
I wouldn't mind putting it out for everybody. It's still going to go down whether I
right. Yeah. And you've got my thank
bye-bye.
You.
Thank you all for coming.
I hope we answered your question.
Yes, we did. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Think about applying for sitting on the committee.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Good night.
Good night.
So you want to put out an email before we vote on it, or before you guys vote on it, right? I mean, y'all can vote on it.
We can vote on it, can't we? I mean, it's on the concept that we're going to do it.
Vote on the concept. I don't think we don't have the wording. That's what I was getting.
Well, right now, the only thing that's in place is if you miss more than one meeting, you're out. Period. Right?
Well, no. Well, the chairman can notify the board of commissioners of the person who has excessive absences, and then they decide.
So then, why would we do this?
To decide
whether it's serious enough to
send it to the board. Yeah.
Would the board? What about this much? Why not proposing instead of the Board of Commissioners deciding whether or not to keep someone? We're the ones who are here, or y'all are the ones who are going to be here, you know, for future meetings and everything else. In the interest of keeping up with self-policing, I guess, in a sense. You know, we know we have people that are on the waiting list to get on, and if the committee decides to that someone's absences, they've had too many unexcused absences or whatever policy that y'all come up with and everything, at that point let the committee decide whether or not that person remains on the committee.
Well, we can't do that because the board makes that decision. But let me ask you this then. Instead of us taking the onus for the people who are not showing up, why don't we put out an email saying, under the regulations, you're entitled to miss one meeting a year. If you miss more than one, you can have an opportunity to petition the committee or whatever to see if it's excusable, and if not, we go to it goes straight to the commissioners.
And I think it might.
We need an RSVP for each meeting.
I think it might shed some light on some folks who might realize that, hey, I don't have time.
There's no shame whatsoever.
Yeah. No, because it happens.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll draft something and send it to you, and you see if it's too mean.
All right.
Okay. I've been cleaning up dog doo at the Mills River Park all day, okay? That's not mine. So I'm really not in the mood for fallout from other people. But, okay, I will do that. One absence. Okay. And then the next thing was dangerous dog appeals. What was that?
This was something that I had asked Brad to put on the agenda for this meeting and everything. Whenever y'all get new members on the committee, I would suggest whenever you get a new member on the committee, take 5 minutes to go over the dangerous dog appeal process, what it's about, why we do it, what we're doing. Because I know when I first, I learned by going, you know. I learned by going. Nobody ever explained to me, okay, this is why we do, this is what we're doing. But over the course of time, I learned that, okay, you know what, we have a certain set of parameters that we as the committee, whenever we have one of these quasi-judicial hearings, we have a very finite period of time that we work with, and that we don't necessarily go back for the past 6 months of the dog's life and judge what they've done, good or bad or anything like that. It says very specifically in 16-10 under subsection D, where it says appeal, number 3 says, and this is where we come in, hearing procedures. Once properly appealed, the Animal Services Appellate Board shall conduct a public quasi-judicial hearing to determine whether the declaration of the animal as dangerous or potentially dangerous is correct. That's what we do. We decide whether or not the dog that was the animal that was deemed dangerous was deemed dangerous correctly. Whether the sheriff's department, the animal services officer, whether they followed procedures doing that or not, and basically that's it. I felt bad. Was the last appeal we did, was that your first one?
No, it's my second.
That was your second one. Boy, that was a heartbreaker.
It was hard. None of them are easy. I think they're all awful, but that one was particularly
hard. That one was particularly hard, and the reason being is because it was the dog that was attacked was due to nothing but inadequate equipment for the dog that attacked it. This woman, what happened was, is this lady had a dog. She was dog sitting for someone, I forget what the breed was. It was a small dog. And this other couple, who they've raised, they've had a couple of German Shepherds, and I think one of them was a German Shepherd, wasn't it, if I'm not mistaken? The dog, when they got the dog, it had a small chain, small choke collar, and all that other. Well, what happened was the dog, when they got it, it was probably 20 pounds, maybe 15, 20 pounds when they got the, the leash and the choke collar and all that stuff. Well, the dog was 120 pounds, and the O-ring that was on the choke collar bent open. It pulled against it when this lady walked by with the dog in the neighborhood, and it's a neighborhood that's right across from Fletcher Park, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Mills River Park, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And the ring on it had just pulled open, and the chain popped off, and there goes the dog, and it attacked the other dog that was there. It was tragic. I mean, that was sad. It really was.
It was upheld.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We upheld it because the dog got off of its restraint and it attacked another dog and caused some serious damage to that other dog. I mean, $1,800 in vet bills, I think, was the last count.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the hearing. So, and
it went off its property onto the street.
Yeah,
how old were the owners?
Us
young. The owners of the little dog.
The big dog. How old were they?
They were older people.
Older folks.
And they had had.
But they were responsible owners.
Yeah,
They were responsible owners. They cared about
the dog.
They kept the dog up. They kept everything. And this was just one of those that it was a very tragic circumstance, but that's one of those, it happens, and they weren't prepared for it. They came in, and we listened to the appeals process, and basically, to be honest with you, after listening to the county present their side,
they went through, and I'm sitting there going, okay, check, it ran off the property, check, it went, you know, you're going down through the definition of dangerous dog here on the first page, and it's like, okay, it inflicted serious injury on another animal, it was off its property, all this other stuff, what it ran unrestrained. So you're going through, and that's basically what we have is a checklist to go check, check, check. Okay, it meets the qualifications of dangerous dog. So you've heard the county side, and then you listen to the appeals side, and you know, they basically confirmed the story that the sheriff's department had said. They confirmed the story. You know, I mean, it was as cut and dry as it gets. 15 minutes, and honestly, we could have been done. But we were, you know, but the gentlemen, super nice folks, and like I say, responsible pet owners, you know, we listened, and I had to cut the fella off several times. I felt bad doing so, but I had to cut him off because he was wanting us to take in the animal's upbringing, and he was wanting us to take in that he had, you know, cared for these dogs, and he'd raised it from a pup, and it was a one-time accident. But we don't have a graduated system of, oh, you bit one time, okay, you're on probation. We don't have that in this county, and I had to explain, you know, I even read to him part of the ordinance here as far as what the deputies, you know, and they provide that whenever somebody's dog is deemed dangerous. They provide them a copy of the part that, you know.
They get a big booklet.
Yeah. So, you know, he had that, and not only had he been given that, I read that to him again. So everybody who was in the hearing, and this was a full room this go-around. It wasn't just a couple of people showed up. It was a full room for this one. And I basically just had to, you know, read about, you know, here's why, and here's what we're judging this against. Here's the criteria. He had brought a pet groomer that comes out to their house, and she does not like German Shepherds at all, but that one was just so friendly with her and all that. Well, that's really, you know, it's tough, but whenever you get in these appeals, these hearings and stuff like that, sometimes you have, I find it's really difficult to keep within the...
That's because they think that they're trying to argue and persuade, and that's really not the standard.
They have to understand that it's not an adjective describing the dog.
So well, nobody wants to take a risk that, the, you know, this happened, and what's going to happen next. Yeah.
So the reason I had asked Brad to add that, though, to the to tonight's agenda was in the future, whenever you guys bring on new committee members and everything, I'd take 5 minutes to do just what we did right here and say, okay, look, here's the ordinance. If you're not familiar with it, this one little section, when we do an appeal, this is what we're doing. And it's, you know, it may take a little while because there's, like Paul said earlier, emotions tend to run a little high with people's animals, and understandably so. That's their, to some people, that's their kids. But at the same time, you know, I think in the 5 or so years, close to 6 years that I've been on this committee, I can only think of two that we've overturned. One was due to circumstance, and the other one was what was being, in my opinion, what was being asked was to deem the dog dangerous was way far outside the scope.
It was a nuisance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, and I was on that one.
Yeah, you were there with me on that one, you and Patty both. So, but I would just suggest, just my suggestion, I would take 5 minutes and just say, okay, hey, welcome new committee member. Guess what? If you show up for a hearing, here's what we're doing, and here's kind of what we have to look for, and here's our guidelines. And I would suggest
it's
doing
tough.
That.
It's tough. It's
oh god.
Yeah, it sounds easy talking about.
No, it's
it.
Not.
Yeah,
it's not.
I'm sitting here thinking, man, I'm glad I'm not y'all.
No, it's tough. And that one was hard.
Yeah, I mean, because you know your own dog, and you think, but. Yeah.
Well, when people appeal
under the right
to me,
circumstances,
I'm thinking, you know, I go down that checklist and think, well, there's nothing to appeal. You're telling me that you know your dog was off the farm. But and one thing that John has done well in these hearings is kind of fostering or kind of not being so blunt and kind of, you know, He breaks it to them gentle. Yeah, but still guided. Yeah. But he breaks it to them gentle.
Right.
As to where some people maybe sitting there might say, you know, well, this happened. You're not denying that it did. Why are we here? That's what some people would do.
Yeah,
I know. I'm just saying that's what some people would, you know. Well, why are we here if you're saying that, if you're not contesting the facts?
Well, I think I'm going to make a motion that we keep John and Patty.
I'll second that.
I think it's worth trying to see, I mean, if someone wants to extend their time on the committee, if they can.
That would be a good agenda.
I guess it has to be approached with the county commission.
Right, and there are people who are in line, but some people are just such assets. And if you wanted to, then I don't know. It should at least be looked at.
I can reach out to Terry Wilson on that.
I like
and
her.
Just see. Just ask her. Say, look, what's the process for, you know, instead of having, what is it, two terms?
Three.
Extending it to four terms.
If somebody wanted to, they have an option, or they can apply for it even. Yeah. Okay.
But each time y'all's term expires, you have to be reappointed at the meeting. So the process happens, so it's just be adding another term if you want to do it. So.
Well, I won't.
But I would be.
Anything else?
But Adam, when y'all start looking at this stuff, let me know. I'd like y'all to come out and look at the cards, because you would get more of an understanding of, you know, where I'm coming from on this process, and look at what we've done in the past. Listen, this incident, the way that I have always kind of guided my decisions in euthanizing is, can we do it legally? But that's not how I'm going to be moving forward. It's going to be, yeah, we can do it legally, but does it pass the front page test? I think that's
how you could listen to the what you gave us in October.
Yeah, I really do. Yeah. I think, like I say, there was, we've had a couple of meetings here, and the hearing that we went to last, and then the prior meeting where we had several people that were like, you know, we didn't even know this committee existed for whatever reason and all that. And
oh, yeah, so that guy's applied, that one guy, and I think, I hope he gets on. I think he would be
good. The guy that owned the dog that was in
Arkansas. Jack Walsh is his name.
And I think we all know what a media frenzy this past year has been. Dogs, I mean, the whole
everything.
Thing. So it's kind of gotten out of control. There's nothing that anybody can get by with anymore because of social media, and that just blows things up.
Yeah.
And then there's the fake news. I think I would just say that it was fake news, Brent.
It was unfortunate. And
it was awful.
And I've lost sleep over it. And but it's... It's sad when we pass to any of them.
Do you do we have anything else? If we don't, would you like me to make a motion to leave the public?
Yeah.
I will make a motion to leave the public hearing.
I'll second.
Your chair.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you so much.